That is a nice view. FirstCourseFirst.com, DL here. How's it going? I'm well. Look at that view. Do you know where that is? I don't know. You probably can't see it. I can't tell if you can see it well or not. That is Navy Pier. I am in Chicago. That's right. What better place to do the introduction that I'm going to do than here in Chicago? Why is that a great place? Look, I'm not going to waste a bunch of your time today because we've got a lot to get into. This is a big interview. This is a special one. Luis Post, Chicago's own, St. Louis's own, LA's own, Luis Post. That's right. Veruca Salt, deep from the heart of Chicago in the early to mid 90s when Chicago was Chicago, baby. I mean, it's never not been Chicago, but my God, the music that came out then, Veruca Salt included. She came out with Sleepwalker last year. She's got Veils, the project that she came out with, which both of those, incredible. Go buy them, luispost.com, vinyl, both of them on it. Unfortunately, this is coming out in our interview month, which is great. Michael Beinhorn, that was 2 weeks ago. However, Luis Post, I wasn't able to promote a bunch of her tour dates, but she does have a couple more, so go check those out as well. LuisPost.com, buy the vinyls, check out the tour. What a delight. I already recorded this interview. It's incredible. Spoiler, something cool, what I just found out, I will be in LA the same time that Luis Post is playing the Troubadour. I get to go see her. Extremely excited. So yes, this is the amazing, spectacular Luis Post. The interview was everything that I could have hoped it would have been and more. Just a delightful person. Hope you're enjoying the pod. Hope you're enjoying everything else. I'm recording this and then I'm heading to Treefort, which is some content you will see before, after. I don't know, man. It's a slog. I don't know. You don't care. You're here for Luis Post. Hope you enjoy it. Finger guns. See you on the other side.
If there's anything else you want me to touch on, I know you have a tour. How long is your tour that's going to happen?
The upcoming tour is deceptively long because we're actually going to be out for a better part of 3 weeks, I think. But we're only playing, let's see how many dates, six dates other than these cruises that we're doing.
Oh, okay.
So we're doing one of those rock cruises.
Yeah. So you're.
Yeah. So we're.
What other groups are you playing with?
Being inducted into that world.
Is that lovingly known as like the 311 world or something like that?
The booze cruise?
Yeah.
It might be. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how many they play, that particular band. I think there are some who do them quite frequently.
I mean, it seems like a pretty good gig to me.
I suppose. I get seasick. I get really seasick easily. And so I've requested that they put my quarters in like, you know, those of a delicate, delicate condition, like somewhere, I don't know where that is. Some people say it's like above water. Some people say it's below. Some people say it's the middle of the ship. I'm just like, do whatever you need to do. I'll bring the meds and hopefully I will be able to perform and not be ill the whole time.
Well, hopefully it's a really big ship. That's key.
Oh, it's giant. It's a huge cruise ship. I've never been on one. I would never have been on one were I not invited to do this, but I'm excited for the adventure. So that said, we're going to play five proper shows. Let me count with you, DL. Okay.
That sounds good.
Minneapolis is coming up. That's going to be a stripped down show.
Love it.
Me and Matt Dronick are going to do a set, mainly acoustic set. Because this particular show didn't work with the routing for the tour.
Okay.
We're adding it separately. We're going to fly out together from LA and do this show together. And it's going to be more of an intimate like storytelling evening. And it's weird because it's at the entry in Minneapolis, like, you know, the 7th Street entry.
Yeah.
So it's a like super rock club. Like it's where we got our beginnings.
That sounds fantastic though.
I hope hope so. Yeah. I hope, you know, I hope people like it. I don't quite know what it is yet, but we're going to find out. And then we come back here and the band will rehearse just prior to playing the Troubadour in LA, another institution, legendary venue.
So. Yes.
I've never played the Troubadour, so I'm excited.
You really haven't? That shocks me.
I've played a lot of clubs in LA, but never the Troubadour.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome.
It's all ages, so I'm excited because my daughter can come and bring her friends.
That's awesome.
Which is what happened at the Echoplex last summer. It was like 13-year-old girls, just a gaggle of them, like laying waste to the place.
Has your daughter picked up the music bug from you and your husband?
She's really musical, naturally musically inclined, which is why I think she is, and because her dad and I do it, she's turning away from it. She was really, really good at piano naturally, really good at flute naturally. Mm-hmm. I told her she had to choose one. She chose flute and dropped piano, which broke my heart. I have a very defiant and opinionated and forthright, self-assured kid who is...
That's how you want them, right?
Yeah, I'm absolutely. She knows what she wants. Then we're playing, Chicago, St. Louis. We're doing the 1 week of the cruise thing, and then we're doing Chicago, St. Louis, Nashville.
Awesome.
And after LA. So yeah, five shows and all in cities I love. I'm from St. Louis.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you're from St. Louis, which is one of my favorite cities. And then, but you're more known as a Chicagoan. I don't know if that's just because that's where Veruca Salt was from, but when did you go from St. Louis to Chicago?
I consider a lot of places my home. So it's like I get to play many hometown shows. It just feels like they're just of a different nature.
Yeah.
But wherever one spends a lot of time, it becomes one's home. And it's like there's so much history there. And I was in Chicago for 10 years. That's a good amount of time.
Yeah.
I really am a Chicagoan. That's how I feel. I also absolutely feel like a St. Louisan. And I feel like a New Yorker because I went to college there. And now I've lived in LA longer than any of those places. So it's strange to realize that, I mean, this is literally, I'm in my home. I live here. So LA is my hometown show.
Yeah.
And I have like my whole community here. But when I go to St. Louis, I have, I'm literally in touch with like everyone I've ever known. It's exhausting, but it's awesome. And so I like all my high school friends are coming to the St. Louis show and I mean, they're going to turn out and
I'd imagine you have diehard fans in both of those cities, right? In Chicago and St. Louis.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And Chicago is definitely a hometown show. And I'm playing the bottle in Chicago, which
awesome.
Is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it's so fun. I'm so excited.
So who is going to be with you on this tour?
So my band lovingly dubbed the Smoke Show because they're also smoking hot.
I love that.
Is this of Matt Drenick, who produced Sleepwalker.
Yes.
Matt Drenick of Battle Me and formerly of Lions and a producer, record label owner, amazing friend and just cool ass dude. He is, he's also my neighbor, which is weird.
Oh, wow.
But Matt produced Sleepwalker and he is now in my band and he's music directing the band. So he helped pull in Rob Sanchez, who plays drums mm-hmm. and is an excellent drummer. He plays mostly with Sarah Jaffe, but he's an integral part of this band. He's excellent. I love being in a band with him. And Randall Blaschke, who's also in Battle Me, is an excellent guitar player and he just rips solos so I can sing sometimes and like certain ones that I didn't play on the record, like in Shutterbug, there's a screaming solo on the choruses mm-hmm. that I didn't actually play. Jim Shapiro played it.
Okay.
And so Randall just steps right up and just like shreds and then steps back. He picks up all the cool stuff. And Nicole Fiorentino, who's my dear friend and bass player for Veruca Salt 3.0, like,
yeah,
she played on VS4. She was, she is a really good friend of mine. And then she went on to play for a while. She was playing in Light FM with a guy named Josiah Masachi, who's from Chicago and was in a band called Motorhome. And Light FM opened for the Pumpkins. Billy saw her and snatched her out of Light FM and asked her to audition for the Pumpkins, or invited her to join or whatever.
That's not a bad
gig. She was in Pumpkins for some time, for a few years.
Wow.
Most recently, she's doing various projects. She's been on a number of records and done various projects. And I was so excited to when I asked her to be in my band, my live band, and she said yes. Like, without hesitation, she said yes. She's like the kind of person, she's so easy to be in a band with, so easy to tour with, so easy to talk to. She's a delight. And she's also like a savvy veteran now. So we've both had a lot of time between now and like 2008 when we last played together. I mean, a lot of time in life has passed. So we literally spent a lot of time just catching up on the road, just and having, it was like falling right in together. I feel so lucky, so fortunate to have played with the level of musicians I played with, mm-hmm. the people. I played for a while with Michael Miley. He's the drummer in Rival Sons now. Prior to that, he was in a band called Bird, who were amazing. Yeah. And
I know him well. I very much love Rival Sons. That band is incredible.
Oh.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. Love that band. Mm-hmm.
So he played on an EP of mine and we toured together. And yeah, I love him. You know, I've had great experiences with, I toured with Eva Gardner. She's now been Pink's bass player for some time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And my dear friend, who's like a brother to me, Stephen Fitzpatrick, we worked together for a long time. Mm-hmm. And the list goes on, like really good quality people.
You have been in the industry since a time when the industry was so different. As somebody who's, I guess, watched the music industry grow from the inside, how much has touring changed?
The last time I toured was 2018. And then I toured last summer, 2023. Mm-hmm. And the last tour I did was a really cushy tour. It was a festival tour in Australia. And we were doing fly dates because that's how Australia is laid out, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was just really comfortable. And prior to that on Ghost Notes, like there was no way we were getting into a van again after like that many years. And so even though it wasn't a high budget release, we figured out a way, you know, to make the bus work. And it definitely, like, we took a hit for that, but it was still doable. But now it's not doable anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it's not doable. So I toured in a van last summer, in a Sprinter van.
Wow.
Yeah. And I didn't like it. I am a prima donna. I don't like that. I'm not into it. I don't want to be in a van.
Hey, well, at a certain age, we grow accustomed to certain things that we're going to have now. And yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not into it. I'm not going to be doing like a bunch of van tours. I'm not going to be slogging it out on the club circuit. Like it's not my jam, but yeah. I love the experience of seeing my fans.
Yeah.
Who have been there for so many years, and some new, some old, some all the way, you know, all around. But I would say that like getting in the van last summer and going through everything I went through, including getting gear stolen literally on the third day.
That's right. You did. Yeah.
And then getting COVID in Toronto and having to cut it short, which is why we're doing these shows. Originally, it's just a makeup tour. These Midwest shows were just makeup shows from last summer because I got COVID in Canada and I had to fly all the way home to LA. All of the stuff that happened last summer was so worth it to have to interface with the people I did, the people I met, the people who have followed Veruca Salt since the beginning or whatever. Like, yeah. I said, jumped on board whenever they did, like along the way, and who just are Sleepwalker fans. Like, it is so motivating to me to connect with fans. And I have a group of fans that I feel like at this point are my homies. They're just my good friends who happen to be fans, because they would like take a bullet for me. They defend me, they protect me online. They're, you know, they run fan pages for Veruca Salt off without any compensation, and yeah. have for years. They just do it out of love. You know, it's amazing. But beyond that, like, I always assume it's just this little nucleus of people who support me and love my music, and that's who I'm making it for. But I came to understand, as I have to, you know, from time to time, that there are a lot more people who really are invested in what I'm doing yeah. and putting out, and who are going to show up. And it was incredible. It made me incredibly emotional, and was very incredibly touching to talk to and to meet so many people who cared so effing much.
I think for a lot of people, and me included, the music that, I mean, American Thighs, when that came out, for a lot of us, I was 12 years old when that came out. But, you yeah. know, for me in my house, there are a few select CDs that I remember always just being on the disc player, just like ready to pop in. And that was one of them. And I think anytime you have something that was that influential, you know, we have another gentleman that does the podcast with me that is 8 years older than me. And he was the same way, because that was, you know, 20, 21. That's a very influential age too. And I think when you have music that comes out, that came out in such an important time, it just means so much that those aren't things that are going to fade away, especially when, you know, all the other stuff that you've done in the album after American Thighs, and the stuff that you went on to do all the way up to Ghost Notes, and now the couple projects we'll talk about that came out last year, it's consistent. Like, you very obviously have never just said, well, I've got to pop some shit out there so I can sell some albums. It's obvious that you've put a lot of yourself into these projects. So it's easy to root for you.
Thank you. I put all of myself into these projects.
So that's a good jumping off point to Sleepwalker. One of the first things that I want to talk about, and I don't know if it was just because of Matt Drenick, because you were working with Drenick, there is something very different about this project. There is something that is, I'll say it like this. I would guess, from the position that you had been put in at a young age, being as big as you were, that you had to build a very defensiveness about you. And this album seems like somebody who's kind of let their guard down a little bit, and, you know, has had the love for a while, and you have a kid now, and you, instead of seeing those vulnerabilities as something bad, you've grown to know that those are good things. There's a lot of stuff like that in this album. Were you conscious of that? Did that have to come out of you, or did it just happen when you started to make the album?
I think as I was writing the songs, I felt like the only reason to make an album is to say what's on my mind and what's real. And I think I've always felt that way, but I perhaps have tended to be more cryptic. I can't really speak to how cryptic or not this album is, but I will tell you, it's not all autobiographical. Like,
mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's something I always forget, like, that I can write a song that's impressionistic, or that I draws from someone else's life. Like the song Secrets on this album, Sleepwalker. Really hard. I would talk about you dancing on the bar, what you do on display. If there weren't so many secrets in this house, I would talk about you screaming, you freaking out. I would tell you that I'm leaving. It's not literally about something that happened in my family or in my home.
Gotcha.
But it is something that happened. And for me to process it, I wrote a song about it. Other things were very autobiographical. Other things spilled out of me, and I think there is something to be said for being older and being a mom and just feeling like I have nothing to prove, I have nothing to lose. Well, let me just say that I didn't necessarily set out to make a solo album in the first place.
Oh, okay.
I felt like the music just started coming and I had to pay attention. because it's inconvenient to be a musician and putting out records right now. Like,
yes, very.
It's not a money grab. It's not, it's, I mean, there's like no blueprint for the way things are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, it had to be just out of creative urgency and something that was just flowing through me. I really felt like prior to having a kid and beyond, I just wasn't interested. After Veruca Salt 4, I didn't want to fight that fight anymore, that particular fight. And I didn't necessarily want to make music. And I, Tony and I put our guitars in the closet.
Okay.
And they were there for some time. And finally, we were moving to a new place. And he said, okay, if we move there, we have to have a music room. Because this is weird. He said, this is, our guitars are in our closet right now. They're stacked in their cases in our closet. And we are guitar players. And 10 years are going to pass. And we will not have played our guitars. And that's just weird.
It is weird.
So we agreed. And I've written, I'm sitting in the room. We call it the music room. You interviewed Tony in this room and the guitars are on the wall in front of me, not behind me.
Gotcha.
But I've written so many songs in this room and it really did give way to all this new music. And I remember my sister coming into this house and just seeing it empty when we were getting the house. I think we had just bought it. And her saying, I just see you filling this house with music. Just, I want you to fill it with music. And she manifested that for us. And we really have, like, both of us have been so incredibly creative here. And our daughter too. She is, that's as fantastic. I said, has decided she doesn't want to play piano or play flute currently, but she doesn't want to give up her flute. She is a singer. She has a beautiful voice and she's an actor. But right now, in the past 6 months, she's become a very serious dancer, and that is all she wants to do. I should say the past year.
Okay.
That's all she wants to do is dance. so like after this interview, I'm driving to pick her up at school and taking her to dance. I'm probably 80% dance mom right now. Yeah. And that's a conservative estimate.
My daughter is, she's a 9-year-old in gymnastics, and we're talking, like, you know, 16 hours a week of gymnastics. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Oh, I think we're at 15. So kudos to you.
No, it's a grind. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I bring picnic baskets with food because like,
yeah,
you can't eat out all day, every day. And so I'm, let's see, 5% that I have to divvy that up. So I'm like something percent chef. And in there, like in the percentage is also musician, tour musician, songwriter, artist.
How the hell, I mean, you've come out, you've worked on a lot of stuff these last couple of years. We'll talk about Veils. You did the production for the Buffalo Acoustic stuff, Sleepwalker. Like that's a ton of stuff that you've been working on.
Yeah.
That seems very busy to me.
I'm the most busy person I know, truly. I never stop. And I, you know, if I'm on my phone, it looks like I'm not doing anything, not working. It's not true. I am. I'm trying to meditate more so I can calm down a bit and be centered. I have like a ritual in the morning. I do. And that is grounding and centering. But I'd like to add to that. So because, yeah, I'm super busy. I thought like having a baby was the busiest I would ever be, because when you have a baby, they're always with you, right?
Yes.
But no, it just changes. And it's the best thing that ever happened to me. But it's also like, it's real. It's full on.
Yeah.
My family supports my art and my music, and I literally fit it in the cracks. Like I go to a studio day, I book a few studio days when I can. I'm making another record right now. It's like,
wow,
a full on rock record. And not because I set out to do that, but because there were some songs that didn't make it onto Sleepwalker that that they felt like.
What I read, you had a ton of tracks going into Sleepwalker, right?
Yeah. I have so many songs that I don't know what to do with. And then I hear something like, someone will post something on Instagram of a song they're working on. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that verse is great, but I got to write the chorus for you. I got you. Don't worry. I'm really like, I always want to, it's like if I hear an idea, I can't help myself. And it's a blessing and a curse, but mainly a blessing because it gives me a sense beyond being many things, wearing many hats. It gives me a great existential sense of purpose and a practical one. And I hope to think, I'd like to think, I hope that because I know how much music means to me and how much the music I listened to growing up meant to me and the music that still really touches me and moves me and excites me, I like to think that I'm being of service in some small way. That's what really, that's what really motivates me.
I don't think it's a small way at all. I mean, we were kids once. We know how influential music is to people. You know, I think a lot of this stuff is very, very important. And one of the things I love about the Sleepwalker album is there's kind of there's a little bit of a growing up with the artist there, because it's fun to pop in, you know, an album from 1994 and get a little bit of the angst out and, you know, fight the seether, if you will. But then is also, there's something in Sleepwalker where it is an adult who is seeing relationships in so much more of an, it's not linear. It's not one person's the bad guy. One person's the good person. There's a lot more empathy and understanding.
Well, there was definitely a turning point for me, a seismic shift when I realized in my adult life that I am not the victim. That I have a part in all of any conflict in my life, and to see things so in a black and white way didn't serve me or anyone around me.
Yeah.
And it was keeping me from my own happiness and peace. So I see things in a much, I try to see where I may be at fault, you know, more quickly and apologize for it. And also just have more compassion for everyone around me because I don't know their story. And, you know, their path is their path and not mine. So I like to think that I've evolved in a positive way. And maybe that showed up in my songwriting. I don't think it can help but not show up.
It absolutely showed up. Yes.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
That is what I would hope would have happened.
It's also a very, very smart album from a production perspective. There are just certain decisions made, and even the simplicity of some of the engineering, from, you know, dumb things that really, really matter to people in music, like how loud the lyrics are versus the guitars, and, you know, little things like that that I feel like has changed a little bit over the last few years in pop music. And what do you attribute that to? Did you have a lot of hand in production over the last few albums that you had made in, you know, with the Veruca Salt albums and some of the other projects you worked on?
Yeah, I've been co-producing since Resolver. Eight Arms to Hold You was definitely a Bob Rock album.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been co-producing all along the way, and I listen with a fine-tooth comb. My ears are like a fine-tooth comb. I go through everything really, really carefully. We co-produced Ghost Notes. I was involved in like every note of that album, and Brad and I used to. Brad said at one point, Brad Wood, who produced Ghost Notes and or co-produced, I will say, and produced American Thighs. We had a really lovely reunion with him, which was came hand in hand with the band reunion. And it felt like he was a fifth member of the band. He was so involved in that album.
Gotcha.
That said, he didn't make decisions on his own without us, like ever. I was pretty much there for every single note of that record. And I wouldn't say pretty much there. I was there. And Brad would say that we have surgical ears. We are like doctors performing surgery on songs. So the way we listen is like surgery. And so it's actually one may look at a musician listening back to a mix and think they're just enjoying themselves, rock and roll, like smoke a bowl. Yes. But in fact, you're working so hard, you're mentally exhausted at the end of the day, because listening is exerting, you know, it's an exertion. And you're getting it to that place where you're happy with it, where it feels like everything is in its place. That being said, I brought that to Sleepwalker without question, and was involved in every moment of that. And when, Matt was brilliant in creating and, you know, weaving some magic, a lot of magic into this album. We had an ongoing dialogue with what kind of production we wanted, and I did not want to make a big, heavy rock record. I was really clear on that, and he wasn't interested in that either for me and for us. I wrote Guilty and Killer like kind of on the fly. And then The Way We Live also came out during the recording process. And those songs are like the heavier rockers on the album. And I felt like I needed to throw my fans a bone and just let them know that it was still me.
You still had it in you?
Just like so they would recognize it and enjoy it. Not so that it would just be like a 90-degree turn or 180-degree turn, but that it would just, but that there would be something recognizable in there.
I still think that there are hints of, you know, for me, Sleepwalker, I think the influences sound a lot different. I think there's a lot more traditional sounding songwriting influence in there. A lot more of a, you know, I hear a lot more of a Beatles builds and some sort of like the calmer sort of stuff. But, you know, even with some of your earlier Veruca Salt, not earlier Veruca Salt stuff, but the, you know, like Resolver, for example, you can hear hints of that in there. You can hear like things are starting to get a little more complex from a production standpoint, and you hear a little more, it's like instead of grunge, which, sorry for using that word, you hear more of, you know, like a Tegan and Sarah sort of thing. It's just, I think you start to hear that from years ago in some of your work.
You had me at Beatles.
They're an okay band, right?
Yeah. It all started with the Beatles for me. So it's always been about the Beatles. And same with my band. One is trying to even graze the surface of the bar.
Yes.
So I was like, I think that stuff is just ingrained in me. And I prize melody and chords over everything. To me, a song isn't a song unless you can play it on acoustic, and it's wonderful that way.
Yeah. I love that. Speaking of the Beatles, I want to talk a little bit about influences, and I guess that's kind of an answer, but for Sleepwalker, are there any influences for that might surprise people? Anything that you were into at the time or something like that might surprise people?
I mean, I don't think you can hear this, but I was listening to Post Malone pretty much constantly.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a surprising one. Yes.
So yeah, there's that. my daughter was listening to a lot of Billie Eilish. I didn't really like Billie in the beginning. It was just too dark to me. Mm-hmm. And then I you know, sort of similarly, when I was in college, my college suite mate would play Joni Mitchell and Ricky Lee Jones like ad nauseum, and I didn't like it. I didn't it bothered me because it reminded me of, my parents' divorce. It reminded me of everything my mother was going for in the 70s, ERA and the feminist movement, even though it was all good stuff. And I absolutely prize her and adore her for that now. It's at the time it was just, I didn't care for it. Right. I also didn't have a immediate love for Kate Bush, but those three women became huge influences on me. Mm. And they're so deeply embedded in my heart. All three of the albums I was listening to, Blue Magazine and Hounds of Love, are just three of my favorite records. And
those are pretty good ones.
Yeah. Those are really good ones. Oh my God. So similarly, when I heard, I realize now I'm putting Billie Eilish in those leagues by saying this, but I heard her music. I was saying it was really, I found it kind of grating because it was so dark to me.
Yeah.
And, but I came around to it and I came to understand it and hear it in a way that kind of like similarly and weirdly, I had a playlist during the pandemic that kind of got me through a lot. As it happens, I listened to a lot of those two artists and a lot of others too. And they weren't all like 21. Both of those artists had a lot of, airplay. And so I have to say, like, I was influenced by, there's a song called Everything I Wanted by Billie Eilish. And I kept, when we were doing all these years, I kept sending Matt that song because he was approaching production. Like there was a Mazzy Star version, and that's not Mazzy Star, but like Mazzy Star-ish.
Yeah.
And yeah. I just kept sending him that song. Like, nope. he's like, I think you've sent me the song like 10 times now. So the point is not to write that song or record that song, but just that was a reference for me.
Yeah. Those are good answers.
Well, I mean, those are the surprising ones, I guess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me of like kind of like 80s rock, almost like, I think I was thinking of, well, it was Bowie for sure, and like Heroes. I was also thinking of like Public Image Limited.
Okay.
One of my favorite songs is, what's the PIL song that's so good? You could be wrong. You could be right. God, oh, maybe May the Road Rise with you.
Is it called Rise, maybe?
Rise, yeah, yeah.
Is it Rise? Yeah.
Ah, very good.
That's that's like amazing mid-80s music. Yes, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's the top of the mountain. It's so good, that song. But no, I'm not saying that song was influenced by that, but I that song feels kind of 80s to me in a good way.
I absolutely see it. Yeah, for sure.
Well, Guilty is just totally Debaser by the Pixies. I didn't mean to do that. It just happened.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's also just, wow. It's just in there. I didn't know it until later. I was like, I said, when I was recording the callback Guilty, it was just, I thought of Debaser and I thought, can I really do this? Like, you guys, can I do this? Like, it's so obnoxious.
I did not pick up on that at all. So I think you're safe.
It wasn't intentional. And then I got there and I started doing that. I'm like, oh my God, it's so deep. It's so deeply ingrained in me. Like debate that Doolittle was my first Pixies record. And it's just, it's deep in there. So, and then speaking of like, famously Kurt Cobain was trying to write Debaser when he wrote Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yeah.
And that's what came out. Right. And so when I was writing Killer, I had just been listening to Bleach because my daughter was wearing a Nirvana shirt. And I was like, if you're going to wear that shirt, you need to know what you're wearing. So let's cue up Bleach and let's go. And so I'd just been listening to it and I wrote Killer like in an afternoon. And I mean, I'm referencing Nirvana. I'm referencing my favorite song by Sonic Youth called Sugarcane. I mean, I basically pulled the bass line and added it to my bridge.
Uh-huh.
And I literally sing "You're in High School Again," which is a line from School on Bleach. So, I mean, I have to say, like, to me, Sleepwalker is really kind of all over the map. Yeah. Matt Drenick told me it's like a mixtape.
That's great. And actually that, I love that explanation for it, because it is, a mixtape is a really great explanation for it, because a Killer is so different from like Hollywood Hills is from What About, you know, starts with that kind of a acoustic-y, you know, I mean, it's, I think a mixtape is a perfect explanation for it. Yeah.
And it makes sense. Those are a lot of my favorite kind of albums that show different sides of an artist, but have a through thread. And the through thread is obviously the artists themselves, but it also might be thematic. I wasn't really like monitoring closely what my themes were. It was just happening naturally.
Speaking of influences, and this is more about you being an influencer, if you even notice it, you coming from Chicago in the music scene when you did, was such a huge, I mean, everybody was still kind of talking about Seattle, but Chicago was insane. And you coming from there, did you know what was happening at the time?
I remember the whole thing being like, oh, there was a scene in Seattle and now it's here. Being sort of in the eye of the storm. And it really felt like that. It was super exciting. And I don't think it was a coincidence that all of our friends were in bands and they were all really good, like really good bands.
Yeah.
I mean, there were so many.
Yeah.
We just went to shows all the time of our friends' bands. And we knew the songs before they recorded them. I mean, Triple Fast Action would be one of them.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait for their album to come out because I knew all their songs from having seen them play live. Now it's like, this is a sidebar, but I don't like to play new material live before I record it, because that's going to be the first, everyone will record it on their iPhone and that's going to be the first time anyone hears it. And yes. I personally, a lot of people probably don't care or have their, I don't know, maybe they do. I can't speak for anybody else, but I don't like to play stuff live until I've recorded it, because I want, like I was saying before, as like the surgical ear and getting something to the place where you're ready for people to hear it. I want that to be the version. So that said, like, fans are, they like things that are new and fresh and that are only for them. And there's really no wrong way to do it.
No, that's such a good point. And you're absolutely right. Because if you, come hearing a new song from an artist I love, I don't want the first time of it being on YouTube on a shitty phone recording kind of thing. Yeah, that's a really good point.
The YouTube live videos drive me freaking insane. Like, why do people feel like they have the right to do that?
That's like, yes.
I'm just going to take your likeness on my shitty device with terrible sound.
Mm-hmm.
Take this crappy version of this magical moment that is on fire for everyone in the room. I'm going to shove it up on YouTube. I'm just going to slap it up for the rest of the world to see who wasn't there.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are good things to be said for having live videos, right? But ideally, the artist has some kind of control over what is actually published.
Yeah.
And that's not the world we live in.
No, so. It isn't. It's frustrating.
For anyone listening, please don't stand underneath me and like get the most unflattering angle possible and then put it in black and white and try to make it arty in a terrible black and white filter and post that for the world to see. Be kind to the artists you like. Don't do that to me or anyone else. Be kind and thoughtful. Listen, back to Sleepwalker, I just need to tell you that I have this weird thing where I dream songs all the time.
Oh.
And that started happening right out of college. I was dating this guy who was a musician, and he was really talented. And I mean, shocking. I was dating a musician. And I had this dream where he had written this song and was playing it. And I thought to myself, I was a budding songwriter. I had begun writing maybe 2 years prior, and I was just starting to take myself seriously, more seriously as a songwriter. And I thought to myself, in the dream, I thought to myself, oh, he's so good. This is such a beautiful song. Why can't I write a song like this? And I had a moment right upon waking, a realization that I had just written that song. And so I sang it to a tape recorder. Ever since then, I've been dreaming songs, but it's really picked up steam in recent years. Sleepwalker has a lot of different meanings. One being that it's my first proper solo record. And I was a sleepwalker as a child. And I think of myself that way. And if you open the vinyl, you can see my niece, who is 7, sleepwalking the images of her, because I was her age when I used to sleepwalk in St. Louis. And we actually traveled to St. Louis to shoot the album cover. Nina Stiefel picked the photos
of her kind of walking away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of the photos, the front, the back, the inside. So the front is me, obviously, and the inside is my niece, Elise Post, who is walking in the same way. And that's supposed to be a version of myself. But I used to sleepwalk, and I don't anymore, thankfully. But I did, like, through my parents' divorce and beyond, I think it was the way I was handling all that.
Wow, okay.
And the dreaming of the songs, like, it's just picked up, like I said, it's just picked up momentum, and I probably do it nightly, if not bi-nightly. So I'm
that often.
Yeah. I now do it a lot. It's wild. Yeah. It's really wild. I learned Logic, and I recorded like 5 demos, and those were the basis of Sleepwalker. I don't have, a good home studio to record albums on. So I still count on someone else to record for me, to engineer. And I love collaborating. I don't like being all on my own all the time. So I dream songs and I record them, and I feel like they're coming from somewhere. And in a way they all of the songs I was writing really have gotten me through the pandemic and all of the madness in the world right now is like the sense of purpose and urgency to record and write and record. And especially when the ideas are coming so fast and furiously, I don't know how to turn off that faucet, even if I wanted to.
That's good. That's a good thing, because then you can. So you also, like, speaking of collaboration and not being able to turn it off and everything, how did Veils come about?
I would love to tell you this, but I have to say goodbye to Tony, who's leaving who's going on an airplane. Come here and say hi to DL.
I believe we know him as T Parks. Hi.
What's up?
How's it going?
So sorry to interrupt. I'm headed to the airport.
That's okay. That's all right.
We will not kiss on camera.
No kissing on camera. Oh, thank you.
He's a good dude.
Very good dude. The best.
I want to talk about Veils because this project is amazing and it's too short for me. But how did this come about?
It came about with 2 friends. Again, inadvertently, first day of kindergarten. Not me, my daughter.
I was going to say, we're going that far back. Okay.
No, we've already visited my childhood. We were at the elementary school up the street, and it was kindergarten orientation or something. And I keyed in on this couple, mom and dad of another kindergartner, incoming kindergartner. And I thought, those guys. And we can be friends with those guys are like our people. And so we connected with them and immediately became friends, and our daughters became best friends. They were in a band in Brooklyn together, and then they got pregnant and moved back to LA where she was from. So I asked her if she would consider bringing like a music class of sorts to our daughter's class because they didn't have any music program.
Okay.
And she said, sure. So we started like bringing guitar and a bongo like to the class and singing songs with the kids. And that turned into 4 years of becoming like the de facto music teacher for me. Okay. In its elementary school. And I was teaching TK through second or third. And we'd put on these elaborate concerts with like, there were so many musicians. I live in LA. So like all the parents were in bands at some point, you know, and there's like an incredible trumpet player, like great bass player, really cool drummer, like guitar players, like coming out of the walls, you know, like they're just everywhere. There's, you can't throw a stone without finding a great guitar player or bass player, drummer. And so I did this with like every grade for some years. And I continued with my friend Coco with our kids' class, and we do this big end of year concert, and it was awesome. But I realized I couldn't like make any music if I kept doing this because it was full time, even though it was just like a part time thing.
Yeah.
It was taking up all of my energy. So she asked me if I would listen to some demos from their band when they were in Brooklyn that were just kind of sitting around. And I said, sure, send them over. And she said, I really want to do something with these, but I don't know what. So she sent them over, and I was just driving around listening to them. And I found myself hearing the songs and thinking, oh, I love that part. That part is so cool. That part, like the bridge, that should be the chorus, or that should be the verse.
Oh, okay.
And what if, and so I basically, I listened to all these songs. I got really excited about them and about like the idea of reworking them, but I didn't want to do anything without their go ahead. So I reached out and said, like, are you guys like saying this could be on the chopping block? Like we can repurpose and I can sort of rework some of these songs. And they said, yeah, you know, they're just sitting there. So that's what happened. Wow. I took like a bunch of their songs and that's how it started.
Yeah.
That's how the song Widow came about. That's how the song Life Support came about. The song Lazy River, I dreamed that one. Yeah, I just dreamed it. And I texted Coco in the morning and said, I just dreamed our first song. Wow. Yeah, just wild. So, and then the other one was Blue Lightning is a song that Holly had been, he had just had this riff that he'd been playing for years. And his dad had just passed away. We were all kind of dealing with like heavy stuff at the time, like people passing away in our lives. And just for the first time really dealing with loss. And Cully had this riff that he had been playing on acoustic forever. And he said, do you have anything for this? And I said, I came up with something I wasn't sure about. And then we started recording it. And I heard the chords from, I was making coffee and I heard the chords from the kitchen. And all of a sudden the lyrics and the song and the melody just downloaded.
Mm.
Like the harmony, the melody, the lyrics. I would have scribbled out the lyrics and Coco watched me like, holy shit, did that just happen? Like literally I saw that happen and the song was born and it's came so together. Good.
That, Thank I mean, you. that whole song, that acoustic part, I'm glad that you did something with it because that guitar, the vocals, the harmonizing, man, it's a really good project. It really is.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the only reason we stopped recording was because of the pandemic. And then, so we made the videos that we made during lockdown. We didn't even see one another for Widow and for Life Support. Coco had a mask on and a face shield and we were staying, you know, social distancing and I was all freaked out. And I'm editing the Blue Lightning video right now. So,
awesome.
I love videos. So I'm going to try to keep making them.
Good.
Regarding the rest of the album is done. I mean, we have all the songs. We just have to record them. Wow. And I was already on to Sleepwalker. So it got put on pause.
Well, I mean, for any listeners that have heard one project and not the other in Sleepwalker and Veils, they're such a kind of a perfect juxtaposition of each other that, you know, you turn on Veils and you get, I mean, Lazy River being an opening track, you get this mid-90s rock again, that real kind of, not sludgy, but dark, ominous kind of feel. And then with Sleepwalker, you just have such an introspective, lighter thing. It's two different projects that I think fit together perfectly.
I'm so glad you think so. I can't wait to finish recording the rest of that album. I'll probably do it as soon as I finish recording the rest of this album that I'm working on. I love the songs. I love them. And there's a real magic between me and Cully and Coco that, again, we just,
it's palpable. We write together. It's, you can hear Thank it. You. Yeah.
And what do you think Lazy River is about? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea. It could be for me instinctively, and this is probably just projecting, but it feels like somebody looking back at a specific actual physical environment, sadness that it's not there anymore. I'm doing a terrible job of explaining this, for me, it reads of something like that, is somebody either longing for something in their childhood or trying to come to terms with something that happened to them in their childhood.
Wow. I love that. Our intention was that it's sung from the perspective of someone who died crossing the Rio Grande, getting to the States.
Which I didn't even, because the end, you have the that news clip that...
Yeah, it's about the absolutely tragic, horrific border crisis that we have going on.
Yes.
And the fact that people are dying to get to this country. And I know this is not new, but it's very like a clear and present danger.
Right, absolutely. Now. It absolutely is. I think for multiple reasons. Yeah. That is a very powerful song. Now that I'm starting to rethink it in my head. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm glad that it has a universal meaning that isn't necessarily specific to that. And that was what your perception of it. That's why I was curious.
Well, it just has a certain feel that I think is going to, you know, no matter who you are, it's going to hit you in a specific way that, you know, that is powerful.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
I've stolen you from it for an hour. I just have one more thing that I have to tell you. And it is that for probably the last like 25 years, I've been a staunch believer, and I have let it be known to everyone that I meet, that the band name Veruca Salt is the best band name that has ever existed, ever. It is the greatest band name that has ever been. I don't imagine, it's a dumb question that I'm sure you've been asked 900 times, but I'm sure it wasn't just the famous Road Dahl character, Veruca Salt. What was the meaning behind Veruca Salt, or was it just a cool fucking name?
It was a cool fucking name.
I love that.
That's really it.
It's the greatest band name ever. It really is. It's perfect.
I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you're saying that. I've heard over and over it's a great band name, and literally just came out of me and Nina just leafing through books, and that one popped up and it stuck, and I liked it because of the sonic assault idea that
absolutely.
We were going to become, and the assault, the word assault being inherent in that. It just stuck, and it wasn't like we thought, oh, this is the best band name ever. It just stuck. We just became that.
Well, it's perfect. So well done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Luis, I am so grateful that you came on. I have been a huge enjoyer of your music for most of my life. I really, really appreciate you, your family for, you know, working with me on so many different things over the last year. I'm really excited for your new projects to come out. Good luck in your tour. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for everything you do and for supporting independent music and being such so vociferous about, you know, the state of affairs and the music industry and the plight of musicians at this time. I think the fact that we're all still making music is really positive and speaks to the resilience of artists and the importance of contributing artistically to the collective, so that people don't become despondent and jaded, and so that, you know, everyone hopefully wakes up and stays connected to one another, rather than retreating to our little like cocoons where we can't do much of anything.
That's extremely well put. I very much agree with that. And hopefully we as a community can figure something out soon.
Thank you so much, DL.
All right. Good luck at dance practice.
Thank you.
And just like that, it was over. Spectacular, right? What did I say? FirstCourseFirst.com at FirstCourseFirstPod. Go to our Instagram. Go to LuisePost.com. Go to her Instagram. Follow her. Who doesn't want to hear? I'm excited for her new project. Let's get that going. Let's hear it. The Buffalo Acoustic. Have you checked that out? Spectacular. Man. That is a house of talent. I am excited for her daughter to turn 21 and come on the pod and have a cocktail with us and talk about whatever album she just comes out with. That's going to be brilliant. Hope you enjoyed. We love y'all. That's it. I'm leaving it at that. Good night and good luck.